David Hinchley from the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Welcome again to the My Page Cricket Show. So, David's been away for a week, as you all might know. He's been away on holidays. How was that, David?
Yep, very nice. Fully rested and went for a swim every day and had a lovely time just not doing anything to do with cricket at all for a week.
That's good. Do you have some good quality time with your family?
Yeah, it was good. We've got two boys. We've got a 7-year-old and a 1-year-old. So it's nice to play in the pool and go down to the beach and luckily we had some good weather, which is rare for October in the UK. But we had some decent weather, so
yeah,
we did lots of things and we spent lots of money on the arcade machines and generally sort of hung around not doing very much, just having a nice time together. So it was great.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, but I'm back now. I'm back on full alert and ready for another show.
And how's your cricket training going at the moment, your off-season cricket training?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, this week, obviously, it took a little bit of a backseat because there hasn't been anywhere for me to train. I mean, I could have gone for runs and things if I wanted to, but I decided, instead of doing that, I went to the gym on the day that we left.
Yeah.
And then I didn't do anything for the week. And then I went to the gym on the day that we came back. So I still managed to squeeze in two gym sessions. So I don't think I missed out too much. Yeah. I still managed to put another 2.5 kilos onto my squat while I was away. So obviously the rest did my legs good. So
yeah.
Yeah, so it's going well. The training's going well. But I've got to ease myself back in this week. I don't want to push myself too hard this week. And you're still playing, so what's been happening with you?
Yeah, we had our third game on Saturday, which was yesterday. And we played in the smallest ground you have ever seen.
Really?
Basically, every edge went for a 6 or a 4. So it was pretty challenging, but it was good to watch.
How far were the boundaries?
I wouldn't say, it's probably be the about the infield of a normal cricket ground.
So what are we talking, 30 yards, 40 yards? What's that in metres? I don't know what that is in metres.
Probably about 40 yards, I'd say. So not too big at all. It was just really challenging for the bowlers.
We played on a small ground last season as well, but it was completely negated by the fact that the rugby season had started the week before.
Yeah.
And they'd mown the outfield because they mowed the rugby pitches and they mowed the outfield as well.
Yeah.
But they mowed the outfield and left the grass on the outfield. There's about a half inch carpet all the way around of mown grass.
Yeah.
So you couldn't hit the ball anywhere at all because as soon as it hit the ground, it just stopped basically.
Stopped. Yeah.
So even though it was a short boundary, it was quite a low scoring game because nobody could hit a boundary hardly unless you hit it for 6. You have to hit it for 6 because you could.
Yeah.
I think there was about 10 sixes and about 2 fours in the entire game.
Yeah.
So what were the scores? How did you do?
They batted first and they got about 211 in about, say, probably 30 overs.
Right.
And we had to chase, and the second day is next week, but we had to sort of get some inroads into that score. And our team is full of patient batsmen who really grind out their 50s and 100s, and their team had a lot of pinch hitters.
Right.
So all our batsmen sort of took their singles, and at stumps, I think we're about 50 for one. So we should be able to chase that, I think.
So, right, okay. So you're looking to get a lead?
Yeah, and probably... Yeah, we'll try and get a lead and put them back in.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. Depends on how they bowl next week, I guess. And we've also had a few problems in our team as well. I think you've written an article on this before, but our captain's really, he's more targeted towards his main strike bowlers and strike batsmen. So he has about 3 of his mates on the team and they bowl most of the overs and they bat in the top 4. It's really, most of the other guys are a bit not happy about that. But there's a little bit of division going on. we're still trying to be together. So would you have any tips for that?
Well, that is quite a common thing, I think, in club cricket, especially.
Yeah.
You get a couple of players who can dominate.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why people say you shouldn't have professionals or overseas players in club cricket, because they can sort of take control and dominate the game completely. So, you know, they open the batting, they open the bowling.
Yeah.
They take all the catches, you know, they do everything. So, and it doesn't give other people a much of a chance.
Yeah.
What I think it's, especially in club cricket, I know when you're in a situation where you're in a league and you're trying to get points and things like that, it's important to win matches.
Yeah.
But I think that it's equally important, if not more so, to make sure that everyone feels like they've got a game. As a captain, I'm talking about. If you're the captain of a side, you want to be constantly thinking, who's not being involved in the game and how can I get them involved in the game somehow? Now, that can be easier said than done in a lot of occasions.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no reason why you can't do, why it can't be done. You obviously have to look at each situation individually.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why you can't. If you've got a young player who's in the team making up the numbers, but you know he can bowl a bit.
Yeah.
Then, you know, why not give him a couple of overs in the middle of the innings?
Yeah.
What possible harm can it do? I mean, yeah, he might get smashed around. That would be the worst that would happen. Say you bowl him for two overs and he goes for 20. Well, yeah. You just take him off then, don't you?
Yeah. At least he knows he's had a go.
And then he's had a go. And even then, he can't say to you, well, I didn't even get a go then.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice on that. But, that, I mean, that really is... That really is something that the captain needs to take the control of, and if the captain is the type of person who thinks that we must win at all costs, and the way to win at all costs is to play the person who I consider to be the best batsman and the person who I consider to be the best bowler, you know, bowl them through the day, and then get them to open the batting as well. If they think that's the way to do it, then there's not much you can do to change someone's mind. You know, you might catch them in the bar afterwards and tell them some other options.
Yeah.
It's difficult if you're not a senior player or the captain yourself.
Yeah. It's funny because he only trusts his senior players. That's because most of the guys who don't get a go are the young guys. So I don't think he thinks we can handle it, sort of thing. So maybe he's just got to get a little more trust.
Yeah, and it is a catch-22, because how does he know you can handle it unless he gives the younger players a go under a pressure situation?
Yeah.
You know, he's probably right in thinking, well, you know, if it's a pressure situation, I want my best players, the guys I can trust the most, to be in that situation, to be batting, to be bowling.
Yeah.
But how do you know the guy who's just come into the team, who's a bit younger, how do you know how he will react to a pressure situation unless you put him in and say, right, I'm going to throw you in at the deep end here. I want you to perform. I want you to do the job.
Yeah.
But I think that's the mark of a good captain. The mark of a good captain is when you have a team of players who everybody knows what their job is, and everyone's got a job to do. Often in club cricket, you know, you're a player short. At the last minute, you drag in a 13 or 14 year old who hasn't played much senior cricket.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. You're not going to be able to give him much of a game. You can't, because, you know, he's probably too young to be playing. But you can get him involved as much as you can. You can put him in fielding positions where the ball's going. If he bowls, as I said, you can give him a couple of overs. If he's a half decent batsman, then why not stick him in the middle, in the middle order somewhere?
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? He'll get out first ball, but at least he'll have had the opportunity. At least if you send him in at number six and say, go on, have a bat, see how many runs you can get. There's no pressure on you. Just go out and score some runs.
Yeah.
That's great experience, because that kid is playing then without any pressure.
Yeah.
He knows even if he gets out first ball, no harm done.
Yeah.
But he's been given the chance to get some runs. And you never know, he might turn out to be a brilliant player and get a quick 50 that you think, gosh, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I've seen it happen. I've seen young players do very well.
Yeah, I guess that's how you get the best out of players as well. you put the young players under pressure situations, and that's when they perform because they really want to show what they've got.
Exactly, and I think a good captain will take every opportunity to do that. And a captain who perhaps hasn't thought about it as much is less of a risk taker, will think to himself or herself, I don't want to do that. I don't necessarily want to do that.
Yeah.
But I think it's the captain's responsibility to try and give everybody a game. I think that's an important responsibility when you're talking about amateur players. It's a bit different if you're talking about professionals.
Yeah.
Which it happens less in professional cricket anyway, because if you're a professional cricketer, you're a good player.
Yeah, true.
When you're talking about amateur cricket, you know, people who come along every week for the love of the game, who wants to stand around in a field for a couple of hours not doing very much?
Yeah.
You don't want to do that, do you? You want to get involved. You want to be part of the game, or at least have the chance to be part of the game.
That's right, yeah.
So that's what I do.
Hi, sports fans. I'm Jay Rowe from cricketwithballs.com. My coach is obviously the best cricket coaching podcast in the universe, or at least in any universe that we know of. And once you've finished all that educational goodness that my coach has given you, come over to Cricket with Balls and we'll teach you the fine art that is cricket sledging.
All right, let's get into the topic of the week. Some of you might have read the story on KFC, and the story was about the immorality of KFC's sponsorship of Cricket Australia's 2020 comp, the Big Bash 2020 comp. And there's a statement in the Sydney Morning Herald of an Australian paper which says, "We are increasingly concerned and disappointed that Cricket Australia has a sponsorship agreement with and consequently promotes KFC." And they also say, "It is ironic that Cricket Australia, while having done so much for the sport, regrettably encourages the promotion of unhealthy, high-fat, high-calorie KFC products, which more than negate any benefit of the increased physical activity associated with playing cricket." And that's by the Medical Journal of Australia. So any thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting story from a viewpoint of people who play cricket. Because if you look at the undertones of what the article actually says, it seems to me that the undertone is what Cricket Australia and KFC are saying is that you should play cricket and you should eat KFC.
Yeah.
Which is, I think that's a fair assumption. So what you're talking about is somebody, the ideal person in terms of this sponsorship deal is someone who eats KFC and someone who plays cricket.
Yeah.
Now, so the question is that a good message to be sending out to people who play cricket or to people who eat KFC for that matter?
Yeah.
Or people who don't do either. Is that a good message to be sending out?
Mm.
And the argument in this, I haven't actually read the full article, I've got to admit, because you have to pay for it to get the full article.
Okay.
So I haven't read the full article. I've only seen the news coverage of it.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that that this article says that is a bad thing because eating KFC cancels out the healthy side of playing cricket. And therefore, that person who eats KFC and plays cricket will be obese.
Yeah.
And if you put that onto a nationwide scale in Australia, then you're going to have more obese people.
Mm.
And of course, the problem in Australia, just as the problem in the rest of the Western world as well, and other parts of the world increasingly, is that we're all getting fatter, especially children. Every year, the number of people who are obese increases.
Yeah.
So I think the argument there is a fair one from that point of view, but I do have a couple of reservations about it.
Yeah.
First of all, from that quote that you read out, saying that Cricket Australia promotes high fat, high calorie products.
Yeah.
Now I would say that there's nothing wrong with either of those two things. Fat is a nutrient. We all need fat. Without fat, we would be very unhealthy. There's nothing wrong with fat. There's nothing wrong with eating high-fat food.
Yeah.
It's all about the balance of the diet that you have. Mm-hmm. And the same with calories. There's nothing wrong with calories. We need calories to survive. If we didn't eat any calories, we'd die within weeks.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with eating high calories either.
Yeah.
in itself, but you want to look at the entire balance of the whole diet. You know, are you eating more calories than you're burning? Because if you are eating more calories than you're burning, the chances are that you'll be getting fatter. If you only have to look at the example of Olympic athletes who eat anything up to about 10,000 calories a day, and they're some of the most healthy people on the planet. Now, they're not going to be probably not going to be getting their calories from KFC, to be honest about it. But if you're training for 6 hours a day, you need 10,000 calories a day just to keep yourself going. Otherwise, you'd end up in a heap by the end of the week, probably by the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need a lot of calories. So there's nothing wrong with high fat. There's nothing wrong with high calories.
Yeah.
It's all about the balance. If you, how much activity you're doing, and also how much, what those calories are. You know, how much of it is protein, how much of it is fat, how much of it is carbohydrate, how much of it comes from a whole food source rather than processed food.
Yeah.
So just to take the example and say, right, KFC sponsoring Cricket Australia, that's a bad thing, because if someone ate KFC and played cricket, they'd be obese. That's not taking the whole picture into account. It's not taking the whole picture into account from the point of view of that individual person. That obviously, that this is a fake person. They don't really exist. But that individual person, or it's not doing it from the point of view of society.
Yeah.
And the reason it's not, I think, anyway, the reason it's not doing it from the point of view of society is that KFC have got money to spend on marketing, no matter who they give that money to.
Yeah.
So if they give that money to sport, whether it be cricket or any other sport, they would still have that money. So it would still get spent on something. They'd still market KFC in one way or another.
Yeah.
So the question then becomes, if you're looking at it from a moral point of view, the question then becomes, is it better to promote KFC products alongside a healthy sport like cricket, which is redressing some of the balance? And bear in mind that if you're eating a healthy, balanced diet and have KFC once a week, that's not going to make you obese.
Yeah, that's right.
Is it better for KFC to sponsor cricket and balance that out somewhat than just to spend it on TV advertising and promotions and things to get people to come into the shops without playing any sport at all? And if you look at it from that point of view, I'd say, you know, they're probably trying to do some good.
And if you look deeper into the article, they do say that, well, Miss Young, the Cricket Australia spokesman, said that KFC helped the organisation deliver its programs, including Into Cricket, a major new initiative to get children involved in the sport and get active. And he also says that it helps keep cricket in the playgrounds, on the ovals, and at elite level in the field internationally. So I think your point is very valid. I mean, the money has to go somewhere, and if it's going towards sport, then it's a benefit, really, more than a negative. So, yeah, I think the financial side of the sponsorship outweighs the sort of any negative aspects of the sponsorship. Because if they're providing money to keep people into sport, then that would really outweigh the negatives of any people going and stuffing themselves with KFC and getting unhealthy, I reckon.
Absolutely. And the other thing that we haven't really thought about is that it's a wider issue than just KFC, and it's a wider issue than just Cricket Australia.
Yeah.
You can't blame. Okay, you can say, you can look at that one example and say this is a major example of a wider issue.
Yeah.
But I don't think that blaming KFC or blaming Cricket Australia for obesity through this sponsorship is a particularly healthy way to go about dealing with obesity as a general issue, because people aren't educated as they once were about healthy eating and cooking and things like that.
Yeah,
but certainly not in the UK. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Australia.
Yeah,
but certainly in the UK, until very recently anyway, you didn't have cooking lessons in school anymore, and kids aren't learning at home how to cook as much as they used to.
Yeah.
You're getting a generation of people growing up not knowing about healthy eating. And to say that KFC sponsoring Cricket Australia doesn't help with that is kind of, to a certain extent, it's missing the point, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite interesting for people who play cricket because, I mean, on one level, this report is sort of saying, you know, just because KFC sponsor the cricket, if you're a cricketer, then you'd be more likely to eat KFC. I don't think that's the case. I mean, if anything, evidence has shown that the healthier people, the more people exercise, the less likely they are to eat junk food.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, no one really knows why, but there's been quite a lot of research into it. And if you exercise regularly, you're less likely to eat junk food.
Yeah.
The theory is that, you know, if you're exercising, you think, well, I'm exercising, so I might as well eat healthy as well.
Yeah.
And if you're not exercising, you're thinking, well, I'm not doing anything, so I might as well have that pizza or have that chicken in a bucket.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing from a cricket point of view. I know it's not one of our normal coaching type of discussions, but I think it's quite interesting.
And I guess what you said on calories and all that as well applies to general sport as well. I mean, I heard a story about Michael Phelps, the American swimmer.
Yeah.
And apparently he eats about 10,000 or something like that, some crazy amount of calories a day.
Yeah.
Which includes like about 3 whole pizzas and something. But he needed to do that due to the training he puts in.
Exactly.
And they were talking about it really differs on different people and the physical activity or any activity they have in their lives.
Exactly. And so I'm not sure about this argument. I can sort of see the point, but I'm not sure on where they're coming from either an individual level or from a wider society level either. I'm not quite sure where they're coming from there.
Yeah.
I mean, on balance, you know, obviously it would seem better if it was something completely neutral that was sponsoring Cricket Australia. You know, if it was toilet roll, no one would complain about it.
Yeah.
Because we all need toilet roll.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is that. There is that. But I think if you look into it in a bit more detail, I don't think it's as bad as it initially seems.
Yeah, sounds about right. Anyway, we've got to rip into this. We should go into the questions.
Sure.
Sent by readers. And the first question is, hi, how can I lower my body fat, David? As you being the fitness expert, have you helped people lower their body fat percentage? And I really like to know what to do. I would like to lower my body fat percentage to about 10%, and then I would like to start serious weightlifting when I've stopped growing. Is this dangerous for my age? In bracket 16. Thanks. AUZAYN. Can't really pronounce that, but it's from West Midlands from the sound of it.
Right, okay.
From his email.
From his email address, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there which are quite interesting. The first question I would like to know is why focus on body fat percentage? That would be my first question. Having a low body fat percentage is an advantage when you're playing cricket. If you're looking at it from a point of view of you're carrying less weight around, particularly if you're a fast bowler. I mean, how many great fat fast bowlers have there been?
Yeah.
Not many. So I can't think of any, in fact. And even if you're a batsman, it's an advantage. I mean, you can get over it somewhat if you're a batsman, but it's an advantage to have a lower body fat even as a batsman.
Yeah.
Or a spin bowler. So there is an advantage to that, but my first question would be, why are you focusing on that in particular? Because, first of all, 10% is quite low for cricketers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a manageable body fat percentage, so you can get to that, but it would take some work. Would it distract you from the cricket side of things? If he's in the UK, then that's a slightly different thing because we're in the off season now, so you can focus on elements of your fitness that you wouldn't necessarily focus on at different time as in the spring or the summer.
Yeah,
I would say that this time of year you're probably better off focusing on things like strength and power because you know that's more important. That's going to give you a better result. If you give me two people, one person with 18% body fat, one person with 10% body fat, but the person with 18% body fat is twice as strong,
mm-hmm.
then I would take the person with 18% body fat over the person with the 10% body fat every time.
Yeah.
Because you can get body fat down, but you can't. It's much harder to get strength up So my first piece of advice would probably be to really think about why you're going for 10% body fat. And if you're not sure whether that's the right goal to go for, then go for strength and power instead.
Yeah.
The second question is, the second point is how to get down to 10%. So let's say you want to lose a bit of weight. Okay, there's a lot of people who want to lose a little bit of weight and, you know, get a little bit of body fat off.
Yeah.
You know, you look a bit better, you perform a bit better. So, you know, it is an important factor. So if we're talking about that, then there's two things that you need to do to focus on getting your body fat percentage down. Diet and exercise. Those are the two things. What it really boils down to is eat a little bit less food and do a little bit more exercise. If you want to lose fat, you need to burn more energy than you consume. It's as simple as that. There are certain very unique exceptions which I won't go into, but assuming you're a healthy person, you haven't had any history of anorexia or bulimia or anything like that, then eating slightly less food and doing slightly more exercise is the way to do it. Now, the type of exercise you want to be looking at is more of the cardiovascular type stuff. So the first thing to focus on is where can I get in some more exercise into my week. So it might mean playing another sport like basketball or five-a-side football or any other sport really that gets you out of breath. It might mean doing interval training. That's another good way of burning calories and also improving your fitness, your general fitness. So interval training is where you train intensely for a short period, then have a breath and have a rest, and then train intensely for another short period.
Yeah.
So that would be the preferable way of doing it because that's more cricket specific. And the bottom of the pile of all that, if you like, is that long, slow endurance, you know, where you just run or go on a bike for 20 minutes. Now, I don't usually recommend that, but if you're desperate and you need to get your activity level up a bit more, then there's nothing wrong with doing that a couple of times a week for a short period on top of your interval training. So the first step is get your activity level up. So you're doing something. You need to build it up. So it depends what he's doing at the moment. But if you start doing it once a week, then go up to twice a week, then go up to three times a week, you probably don't want to do more than 4 to 5 times a week of this type of exercise because you need to have some recovery time as well. And also you need to factor any strength training that you're doing. So you don't want to be doing strength training 3 times a week and also this 5 times a week. That would be too much. So you want to balance it out with strength training as well. And you need to build it up slowly. You don't want to go in straight into 6 times a week or anything silly like that.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the diet, well, luckily last week there was a really, really good interview with John Berardi, who goes into this in a lot more detail than I can cover. But I will say just very briefly the things that he recommends, which do work. I've seen it work on lots of people, so it's definitely worth doing. Eat protein with every meal, lean protein with every meal. Eat vegetables with every meal, 2 to 3 portions of vegetables with every meal. Eat mainly whole foods. Eat every 2 to 3 hours, no matter what. And get a balance of fats between the 3 types of fat, the saturated, the monounsaturated, and the polyunsaturated fats, especially fish oil. That's an important one. Just get a balance of those fats. If you just do those things, then you will lose weight without even realizing that you're losing weight. Oh, the other rule is carbohydrates, starchy carbohydrates, things like rice, pasta, potatoes, only eat those after you've done intense exercise.
Yeah.
Other times of the day, don't eat starchy carbohydrates at all. The weight will drop off you. The reason being is that if you're getting a lot of protein, you're getting a decent amount of fat, and you're not eating any carbohydrates except after you've exercised, which is when your body needs them, then your body turns into a fat burning machine. The weight just falls off.
Yeah.
So I've seen people lose stones of weight by doing that. So that's the way to do it. Those are two ways to do it. So more exercise and just sort of clean up your diet. I mean, you don't really need to worry about calories, how many calories you're eating and how many calories you're burning. Because if you do those two things, if you naturally step up your exercise and you naturally change to a more protein and fat based diet, I'm not saying low carb diet at all, just lower than usual, then those two things, the weight will fall off you in no time.
Yeah.
If that really is the aim that you want. And how to measure that, I wouldn't worry too much about, unless you've... measuring it with a body fat measurement machine or calipers or anything like that, unless you've got access to someone who is very good with the body fat calipers, you know, the plastic things that you pinch, you know, and you tell you how fat you are.
Yeah.
Unless you've got access to someone who's very good at that, I wouldn't bother too much about that. You can just tell from how your clothes fit, you know, how much you weigh, that kind of thing. It's not a major. Especially when you first start,
yeah.
You won't need the body fat calipers or body fat machine to tell you that kind of stuff. You'll just know. You'll just see it happening very quickly.
On the body fat percentage, David, would there be an ideal body fat percentage for, say, men and women?
For playing cricket, we're talking about now, are we?
Yeah, for cricket.
There is, but it's not something that you really should be focused on, I don't think, anyway, because it's easy to... You focus on the number instead of... You can get distracted by trying to get to a number, whereas the benefits of low body fat are additional to other things. So I wouldn't ever focus on trying to get to an ideal range. I mean, yeah, there is an ideal range, I would say... probably somewhere between 8% and 15%.
Would be
okay, but just naturally, you know, just naturally training will get you into that. You don't really need to focus on it.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in a situation where you can have your body fat tested, and your training and your diet's good, then yeah, you should be somewhere in the 8% to 15% range.
Okay.
But don't focus on it. There's no point in worrying about it. Focus on getting better at cricket. And focus on getting stronger, focus on getting faster, and the body fat will sort itself out.
All right, we'll go on to our next question from Dhruv.
Yeah.
And he asks, I've recently been having problems as a fast bowler. My first problem is that I bowl quite badly until I get my first wicket, and after that, generally, I become 10 times a better bowler. The second problem is that I bowl very badly to children of my age and get smashed all over the park. But when I bowl to people double my age and to far better batsmen, I bowl a lot better and often get them out. Could you tell me what is the problem and how can I perform at my best in all circumstances? That's from Dhruv. So, your thoughts, David?
Yeah, I mean, he's a teenager, so he's still learning. And I think... as we discussed before we started recording, it's a lot to do with his own expectations of how he's going to perform.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a bowler myself, so I don't really know the thought processes that go through this. But you bowl, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's just mainly a confidence factor. I mean, a lot of times when the bowlers have a ball in their hand, they tend to forget that they're the ones mainly in control. It's the batsman that... once he gets out, that's all he's got. But a bowler can come back from a bad ball, and they tend to forget that a lot of times. And I think Dhruv, especially, when he bowls to kids his age, he loses all that confidence. But when he bowls to people double his age, he has no sort of expectation on him because people think he's a little kid. I mean, we don't expect him to get many wickets, so he can just bowl how he likes to the best of his ability, and that's when he naturally performs. So he should just stick to his natural abilities and natural confidence. And maybe when he bowls, he says that he only gets confidence after his first wicket. He should probably, when he starts a spell, he should imagine or remember the times when he did bowl well and get that into his thought process so he can start bowling well straight away.
The modern coaching parlance of this particular problem is that you need to focus on delivering your skill. Now, what that really means is that when you're running in and you bowl the ball, as soon as that ball has left your hand, that is that's the end of it as far as you're concerned. The batsman then comes in and he reacts to whatever you've bowled.
Yeah.
So if you execute that skill of bowling to the best of your ability,
yeah,
then you're gonna get wickets. So because you've done it before.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't worry about what's happening at the other end so much.
Yeah.
And just focus on clearing your mind and saying, I'm going to bowl the ball, this type of ball, whatever it is, whether it's your stock delivery, whether it's a slower ball, whether it's, you know, what bouncer, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the ball I'm going to bowl. Here's where it's going to pitch. Here's hopefully what's going to happen to it. Then you're going to get wickets.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going to get wickets because you've done it before.
Yeah.
So what that does is it takes away the, as we were talking about in a previous show, it takes away the stuff that you've got no control over. Batsman's reaction to your ball, you've got no control over that. But what you have got control over is running in and delivering the skill as effectively as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Another way to look at it, from a coach's point of view, if Dhruv was being coached by me, another thing I would say is, if you feel like you're a bit of an imposter and you're not doing as well as you know you can, then just pretend you are doing well.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing how fast your state of mind can change what's actually happening. I'm not sure if I've spoken about this before, but they've proven that, I say they, research has proven that if you smile, you're more likely to be happy.
Yeah.
Even if you're not happy, if you just put a smile on your face, that will be more likely to make you happy. Researchers have done tests on that by forcing people to put a pencil in their mouth without it touching their lips.
Yeah.
Which forces your face into a smile. So even though they didn't even know they were smiling, they had a more positive outlook on life and they were happier than the people who were forced into a frown without realizing it.
Yeah.
So that's the power. So sometimes we call that fake it to make it, where you fake it until you make it, where you just act as if you're the best bowler in the world and you're bowling brilliantly, even if you're bowling terribly.
Yeah.
You just say act as if you're not. And that act in itself is enough to change your thought process, to change your action, so you're bowling much better again.
Yeah.
So what we'd say to Dhruv is, if you're bowling badly, then put that out of your mind, clear your mind, think to yourself, God, I'm bowling really well here. I'm just about to get this guy out. I've got him in my sights.
Yeah.
Then you focus on delivering the ball as effectively, whatever that ball is, delivering it as effectively as possible and not worrying about the reaction at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Then that should be enough to make the difference.
Yeah.
To change his own expectations of himself.
I read an article recently from the IPL about the Rajasthan Royals team, and Sohail Tanvi, the Pakistani bowler, said about Shane Warne's captaincy that when he struggled bowling, Shane Warne used to come to him and tell him that, just imagine you're the best bowler in the world and none of these batsmen can face you and they're all scared to face you. And immediately that changed his outlook on how he was going to bowl. And just imagining that he was the best bowler in the world, he ended up getting the most wickets in the competition. So it just shows that it's all in the mind.
It does work. It does work incredibly effectively. Just that's where that phrase "fake it until you make it" came from. If you act like someone who's the best,
yeah,
then it forces you to become. Perhaps not. You're not going to turn into the greatest bowler in the world overnight.
Yeah,
it forces you to become better because you're acting as if you are.
Yeah,
and that's enough.
Yeah. That's right.
So that's an interesting one, yeah. Especially from a bowling point of view.
Yeah. I hope that answers your question, Dhruv. Well, that's all we got time for today. Thanks for listening. If you've got any questions, just email us at mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycoach@pitchvision.com. So from Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK. See you next time.